Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. This episode is recorded on Thursday, November 9th, 2017, starting at 4:08 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 132nd episode of the show. For more information about how to subscribe to the podcast and help support the production of future episodes by becoming a patron, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with Joe Gleason and Ryan Butler about some tips for attending astrology conferences, especially if you've never been to one before. Hey guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
Hey, all right. So Ryan, we've done a show together. This is your second time on the podcast. I'm trying to remember what episode that was, but it must have been like...
Episode number? I don't know. It was back when you let me talk on my iPhone instead of instead of the crazy recording system that it has now become.
Right. Those were simpler times before I lost the Dane Rudyard episode with Chet and then instituted a system of 5 backup recordings.
We were all more innocent back then. It's fine.
Yeah, it was much more younger days. So, and Joe, this is your first time on the show, but you're a longtime listener, right?
Yeah, longtime listener. It's kind of surreal, actually, because it seems like not too long ago I was like binge listening to these episodes while I repainted my spare room. So yeah, longtime listener.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have both of you on today. And I'm excited about this topic because this is something that, you know, Kelly and I have talked about at different points, or occasionally like Austin and I have mentioned on forecast episodes or something like that. Or one of the early episodes with Kelly was her and I recording a sort of recap of what happened at a Northwest Astrological Conference a few years ago.
Yeah,
but we've never actually done an episode that sort of gives people background information on what conferences are about or what makes them useful or interesting, or how to go about going to one, and some sort of tips and guides. And when you guys, I saw last month, both of you attended the SOTA conference, the State of the Art Astrology Conference, and you were doing some interesting like social media posts and stuff. And it made me think that that would be a great topic for a show, because there's probably a lot of people that haven't attended a conference before and could, you know, use some background information on what makes them so great and why they might want to attend one. So when was that conference that you guys just got back from?
The 18th to the 23rd of October, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, so that was just a few months ago. And where was it
or
again?
No, it was a few weeks ago, not months.
Or sorry, a couple of weeks ago. And where, what city was it in?
It was in Buffalo, New York.
Okay, and that's an annual conference, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So in terms of backgrounds and introductions, one of the questions that I had that I thought would be a good talking point is all three of us have like different histories with conferences, and we've attended different amounts so that we kind of represent a nice spectrum of that in terms of number of conferences attended and experience in doing this. So I wanted to ask first, right off the bat, you know, what was your first astrology conference, or when did you attend your first astrology conference?
Joe?
I'm going to start with Joe.
Start with the least experienced. Okay. Yeah. So I've only been to 2 astrology conferences. My first was in 2016, and it was also SOTA. And then I went to SOTA 2017 this year. So, yep, just small regional and only been to 2.
Okay. Perfect. Well, that's good, because then you know, having just attended your first 2 recently, you've got a good experience or good perspective in terms of what it's like for a new person. So you can sort of draw on that here for this episode.
Yeah, totally.
All right. And Ryan, you're somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between her just getting started and you, like all of them. I usually try to go to 1 or 2 a year. I feel like that's a good number for me, for someone who typically, I'm going to use the word hates travel. my first one was in 2011, the AFA conference in Tempe, Arizona. I forgot where it was. And that one's a little bit different, because it's not like the typical conferences where you have like multiple tracks and you have like several talks going on at the same time. That one was sort of more symposium-ish, where there were like 130 of us. We were all in one room, and it was rotating speakers between you, Chris, and Demetra George and Ben Dykes. And I think it was just you three. But I've been to the more organized, or the more astrological organizations one, like ESAR conferences and NCGR conferences. And then of course the smaller, more regional conferences like SOTA. So all in all, I've probably been to about 10 since 2011.
Yeah, so you've gotten a pretty good sort of sweep of all of the different types of conferences at this point, and you've also started speaking at them, and I heard that you're going to be doing a keynote lecture at one next year, right?
Yes.
All right, yes, so I'm doing that's exciting.
Minnesota next year. It's exciting and terrifying, but, you know, I'll get through it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing one of your first lectures, which is, I think, a lecture on reception at, like, an NCGR conference a few years ago, right?
Yeah, my first one in 2013. That one was also terrifying, but I got through it, and now look at me.
Right. It's a sort of rite of passage.
Yes.
So one of the early general discussions that we wanted to have sort of right at the top, which was, you know, what did you expect at your first conference versus how was it in reality? Do you guys, because it's been, I forgot to mention, in terms of my background, I think the first conference I ever attended was back in 2005, and it was a Northwest Astrological Conference. And I've attended maybe a few dozen major conferences and then minor or smaller events since that time. So it's a little harder for me to remember some of my initial reactions and stuff, but do you guys remember, you know, what you expected from your first conference versus how it actually turned out?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly remember when I found out astrology conferences existed and I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a thing people do. So I just tried to Google as many as I could find, and they all seemed intimidating. Like, oh my gosh, I don't even know. You know, I wouldn't know anybody. It was nerve-wracking to consider actually going. But I will say that for my first conference, I expected to go to more lectures, I think. I expected my days to be totally full of, like, workshop, you got 15 minutes, grab something to eat, go to the next lecture. And it was a richer experience than that. There was so much more that I learned and you know, didn't expect to experience just by spending time with the people there and the astrologers there. So that was a pretty big thing for me. I was expecting like an intensive, and I got a lot more than that in a different way. So.
Right. And that's a really important point, because that brings up, you know, one of the two primary distinction of the two things that conference is about. And one of them, and the thing that you usually go into them assuming that it's primarily about, is education, which is a big part of it, since they're centered around the lectures or the presentations and the workshops that astrologers give there. But then the other half of it that's also important, or the other 50%, is the social aspect of actually meeting with other astrologers in between lectures or at night at dinner or something like that, and building
to
friendships.
Hours of the morning.
Right. Right. So that social aspect of it. And so that was one of the things that was surprising for you, is that it wasn't just a like educational intensive, but you actually met a lot of other astrologers in person, and that social aspect ended up being important.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, you can go to tons of lectures and stuff, but at some point, like, your brain is so full of information that you just need to like chill and absorb it. And, I expected to like just go like full speed ahead and try to gather as much as I could, but that was not quite the case.
Right. And I mean, in terms of, you know, what's why they're important or what makes them so great, you know, what is so great about meeting other astrologers in person, or what does it make a difference? I guess that's one of the questions I think a lot of younger astrologers might have at this point, or that you might not understand until you attend a conference, which is, if you can, you know, download a webinar online, or if you can chat with other astrologers on Facebook or some online forum or something like that, you know, what difference does it make to attend a conference in person? I know, Ryan, that you wrote blogs, and you and I interacted for years before we ever met up in person. Do you remember that first conference that you attended in 2011 and that making a real difference for you?
Yeah, because it made me realize how big and diverse and different like the actual in-person astrological community is. In a way that I really didn't from the internet, if that makes any sort of sense. But, you know, on the internet, you just sort of interact with people as like a wall of text.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different to then go and like have dinner and have sort of the same conversations that you would have with those people online, but in a much more like personable and more intimate setting. Like, it goes beyond this idea of I talk to these people online and they're my online friends to, no, I've actually met this person and they're like my real life friend. And, you know, just sort of the camaraderie that evolves from those meetings.
Right. Yeah. And that's huge. Or it's something that's hard to convey until you actually get there and you do, you know, make some of those connections, both with people maybe you already knew before you went there, but also mm-hmm. oftentimes, you know, meeting new people that become sort of lifelong friendships that mm-hmm. you wouldn't have made if you hadn't showed up to that place in person.
Definitely.
Sure. All right. So, and in terms of that, I mean, one of the questions that we wanted to address early on was just what makes astrological conferences important. And so it seems like one of our answers right away is that social aspect. But how do you guys feel about, I mean, it seems like the other part of that is the educational aspect. And what do you feel about that in terms of being one of the primary things that are important about conferences? Or do you feel like that's one of the primary things?
Yeah, I do feel like that's a primary thing. Like Ryan was saying, it's totally different to experience someone on the internet or just experience their writing versus experience them teaching right in front of you. A lot of work goes into these lectures and you can get a lot out of it, especially if it's interactive. And it is different than downloading a webinar or, you know, or even buying a book or just interacting online. It's totally different. It's more intimate. And in a lot of ways, you get more out of it that way. And I think that's super important. It totally changes, it totally changed my perspective of kind of astrology in general, just because like things online, you know, you can create an entire perception just from what you see online, but there's something very visceral about seeing all of it happen in person. So yeah, the educational part is huge. A lot of people put together amazing presentations that are really detailed and they're willing to, you know, stay and help you after the lecture or whatnot. So yeah, I absolutely think that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different than like webinars or things you can download online, because while a lot of astrologers who offer those kinds of things will of course be open to accepting, you know, email questions about the content or anything like that, it's a whole different ballgame when that person is like right there in front of you. And all you have to do is like raise your hand and get like a direct response from them for whatever question or concern you have about what they're saying. It becomes like much more of an immediate connection. And like, I feel like students get it much more quickly than if you tried to like write this big whole email response to it, trying to explain what they're, you know, trying to talk them through this situation.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Yeah, definitely that, like actually building a personal connection or meeting somebody whose work you've studied, you know, online or through their books or something for a long period of time, that can really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us, I mean, one of the things we should talk about, since we're sort of taking for granted the nature of an astrological context at this point, is maybe we should talk a little bit about just what the structure is of them or what goes on there. So the main thing, of course, that people go to astrological conferences for, and the main thing that they're centered around, is the lectures. And there's a few different types of lectures that occur at conferences. There's standard lectures, which are basically usually like 75-minute or sometimes 90-minute presentations by the headline speakers. So usually there's a group of, let's say, a dozen or maybe two dozen or so professional astrologers who are invited to speak at this conference and give usually like one or two presentations over the course of a weekend. So most conferences last for maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days. And mm-hmm. you've got the standard lectures, which usually take place from like 9 a.m. until about 4 or 5 o'clock at night. And there's usually about 4 of those during the course of the day, with several of them running concurrently on different tracks. I think, is that the setup essentially at SOTA as well?
So yeah, it has hour and 2 hour slots that kind of alternate, but yeah, okay. It's more or less the same thing.
Okay. Interesting. But it's usually like, I don't know, 4 or 5 different lectures or different rooms where there's different lectures happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those are sort of the core lectures. And then there's also keynote lectures, which sometimes occur like at night, usually after dinner. There's like a major keynote lecture, which is by typically a more prominent astrologer who gives a presentation for the entire conference. So it's not restricted to just whatever smaller number of people they would normally have in a standard lecture room, but instead it's sort of presenting something broader to the entire conference. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're going to be doing next year, Ryan.
Ooh, buckle up, everybody.
Have you started thinking about themes or like topics yet?
Yes. That's all I can really say about it.
Okay.
Like, yes.
I'll just assume you have it all planned out, but you just want to be secretive. And
I appreciate getting the benefit of the doubt there.
Yeah. Very mysterious. Yeah. Very mysterious.
It's building anticipation. It's part of showmanship. So keynote lectures, and usually, you know, the keynote lecture is typically given by one of the more prominent astrologers, like Rob Hand would often give the keynote lectures at Norwalk, or like Stephen Forrest or someone like that. So
They're usually also tied to like some event, like opening ceremonies or like after the banquet or something like that. Like they usually always follow some big thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So there's those lectures that basically everybody at the conference sees, because it's usually in whatever the largest room is that can fit everyone. Then besides those, there's also workshops, which usually happen. There's pre-conference workshops that happen the day before the conference starts, and there's post-conference workshops typically that happen the day after the conference ends. And those are typically multi-hour sort of intensives on a specific topic that's led by a single astrologer. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you sort of sign up for separately if you want to do that in addition to the main conference program.
Yeah, I think the word intensive is a good descriptor for them as far as the differences between workshops and more standard lectures.
Sure. Yeah, because the, you know, the standard lectures are just 75 minutes or maybe 90 minutes, or I think you guys are saying that they're like an hour at SOTA and most of the other standard conferences. And that's, you know, a decent amount of time to give a lecture about a single topic, but it actually goes by pretty quickly in some instances, just in terms of, especially from a teaching standpoint, like how much you're able to actually convey in an hour or in 75 minutes or what have you. Whereas with these workshops, you've got like an afternoon to present and really unpack a set of ideas. So so those are workshops. And then finally, the fourth category is usually referred to as free speech lectures, or sometimes they're called different names. But typically, these are lectures that take place either during lunchtime. So sometimes, you know, if you want to skip lunch, or if you want to grab your lunch and go to one of the rooms, you can watch a lunchtime lecture that takes place sort of in the middle of the day, or sometimes they take place in the evenings.
Or ungodly early.
Oh, the morning ones. I forgot. Did you have to do one of the morning ones?
That was my first one. Was it like 8 in the morning? The NCGR one? It was like 8 in the morning.
Oh, okay. My God, dude.
Yeah. Wow. That's rough. So it's like those are typically, you know, because one of the tricky things from an organizational standpoint is that you usually have these big conferences that the organizations or the organizers put on, and a lot of astrologers apply, but there's only so many spots available for people to speak. So oftentimes there's more applicants than there are basically lecture positions. And sometimes what they do is they open up additional slots during those weird times, either really early in the morning or in the middle of lunch or in the evening, and they give people the chance to give a talk, but they're kind of sort of outside of the standard schedule. And usually sometimes those are like good slots for like newer speakers, where sometimes if you're like a younger astrologer, or if you're newer to the field, you'll be offered like a free speech lecture like that. And then eventually, if you do well, you can sort of like graduate to the main.
Yeah. It's main definitely standard training lecture. Ground for getting like an actual lecture position. And the reason why they're called free speech lectures is because they're usually, the person who gives it is usually not compensated for it. Cause this is like their first go around. So it's like they're testing you essentially.
Yeah. So you're usually not paid for them, but you at least get the chance to sort of present a topic to an audience. And that can be good practice for a lot of people at getting experience and giving talks. So those are the four lectures. And I mean, that's basically, at least in terms of the structure of the educational part of the conferences, that's essentially it, right? I mean, is there anything else educationally besides that?
I mean, not really.
I think that covers it.
Okay. And so let's see. So where should we go? So that's that. I mean, there's other sort of minor things in that you could say is like quasi-educational that are often at conferences. Like, for example, there's usually a trade show or a bookstore or something, right?
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most conferences have some sort of trade show that'll have like books or related occult paraphernalia.
Right. And I mean, that's usually fun because typically most locations or most cities don't have like a really good local astrology bookstore anymore. But usually when you go to a conference, if it's a decent sized conference, they'll have, you know, a good collection of astrology books that you can actually look through in person and pick up and take home if you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The trade room is usually also the only place that's like open to the general public without having to like purchase a conference pass. So just random tidbit of information.
Right. That's a really good point. And so the conferences usually have like vendors and they're selling different, often like astrologically themed sort of merchandise and different stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Software.
Right. Oh, software. Yeah, yeah. So you can see like what solar fire looks like or what.
And that can be actually a really good thing to go to and, you know, get your hands on a program if you're kind of in between, you know, putting down money on an astrology program. They usually will have the vendors who do the software will give you like they'll walk you through it. You know what I mean? Like you can kind of see mm-hmm. what all it can do and you can have them talk to you about it before you kind of decide which way you want to go. If that's something that's on your radar.
Right. Totally. And that's actually a good point. Maybe just about conferences in general is that they're almost like good getting a taste test for a bunch of different types of astrology and a bunch of different things, all things astrological in like a really short, pretty intense span of time over the course of a few days. Cause even the lectures, it's not like for most of the standard lectures, since they're just 75 minutes each, you're getting a really intense short-term exposure to a concept or a new technique or a new approach to astrology. And then if you like it, then you can sort of go on to study it more, but you're not necessarily going to walk out of the lecture as a master of that technique or something.
Yeah, it opens a lot of doors. And it's one of those things where it's always great to find at least one lecture at a conference where it's a topic that you're curious about, but totally unfamiliar with, because it can really give you kind of an overview and just acquaint you with that subject. So you kind of know where to go after that if you decide you want to pursue that further.
Right, definitely. And so that's definitely a good thing to look at the program. So all of the conferences usually have a program or a website where they outline what lectures and what workshops are going to be presented. And you can kind of get a feel for if there's stuff that you're interested in. And so it's a good idea right from the start to kind of plan out what talks you want to see over the course of the week or the weekend. That way you know which ones you want to go to and you can kind of make a tentative schedule about like which lectures you're going to try to hit. And usually one of the main difficulties in that is that oftentimes they'll end up being like two lectures that are happening at the same time that you really want to see. And you have to make a choice between one of them basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, and one of the ways around that, of course, is that you can, usually there's recordings that are done of the lectures that are sold by the conference organizers after the conference is over. So oftentimes like a good way to break one of those decisions is just figuring out which lecture would be better to see in person versus which one you're okay getting a recording of afterwards.
Yeah, that's a good way to kind of balance the two. And plus, you know, you can always, because the speakers are there in person, you can always go and just talk to the speaker of the one that you missed, because probably they'll have extra handouts and that might be useful too.
Oh, hey, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely a good point. And so in terms of that, so oftentimes people will go looking to attend specific lectures, but then the other flip side of that is that conferences are really good in terms of seeing a variety of different lectures and getting exposure to a bunch of approaches that you might not otherwise have forced yourself to see or that you might not have seen otherwise. So that sometimes the educational aspect is just, you know, finding something new or exposing yourself to something new.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you guys feel like, I think Ryan, you were saying that was one of the things that you noticed at the first conference or the first few conferences you went to, was that from the lectures or just from meeting people in person?
Well, so my first conference was the AFA conference, and that one was sort of more linear because it was more symposium style. But then after that, I did UAC 2012. Okay. And so UAC is a different monster for those who have not been to an astrology conference or have not been to a UAC, because while more like the national or regional conferences will have maybe 5 different talks going at the same time, if they're like one of the bigger ones, UAC has like 18.
Yeah. UAC is the United Astrology Conference is huge because it's a conference that only takes place like maybe twice a decade. And it's when all of the national organizations pool that would normally host their own conferences every couple of years anyways, they all agree to hold off on holding a conference for a couple of years and pool their resources to do one big mega conference that has anywhere from like 1500 to 2000 astrologers in attendance and over 100 astrologers speaking.
Yeah.
So that was your second conference.
That was my second conference. And just like imagine sort of like the day night from like, oh, we're all in one room. We're all friends and family. You know, we all did the same thing, to now everybody's just kind of scattered to the four winds because there's 18 different talks going on. But like UAC is actually kind of interesting because if you ever felt that astrology was sort of like a one trick pony, going like seeing 18 different types or applications of astrology being discussed in the same place, like, what kind of change your mind on that? Because it's kind of crazy just how much variety there is in the field in general, but also how different people can take the same thing and apply it different ways. So it's really fascinating as far as like a broadening one's perspective.
Right, definitely. And with UAC, especially because they sort of go out of their way to create different tracks that have different topics or themes or traditions.
And they're all very, like UAC especially works really hard to make their tracks different and thematic, to where like, you know, you always have certain talks happening at the same time. Whereas other conferences, they may not have like a track in mind per se. Like UAC is divided up with like, you know, health and wellness. And in this room at every hour, there's a talk about astrology and health, but other conferences aren't going to have that sort of like specificity.
That's a good point too.
Yeah. And that's really important. Because usually at other conferences, it's more like you'll have 5 different astrologers talking about different topics, but it'll sort of change from session to session, which topics or which traditions or which room. But at UAC, it's always like this room for this week is going to be lectures on Vedic astrology.
Yeah. So you can basically just camp in a room and, you know, get all of the same kind, or not all the same talk, but, you know, all the same sort of theme.
Right. Well, and that becomes one of the questions sometimes, you know, with conferences, where it's good because sometimes it's easy to just see all the talks that you would normally want to see if there's like a type of astrology that you already gravitate towards. But then other times it's sometimes useful if you run into a space where there's like not any talks that you particularly know anything about or that are on a topic that you're familiar with, sometimes to like force yourself to go to a talk that is, you know, outside of your area of expertise or interest. And sometimes that can be sort of a useful growing experience in terms of seeing other types of astrology in action.
Yeah, definitely. But I would say, like, don't pressure yourself to feel like you have to go to a talk every session to get like the most out of your money. Because I mean, I didn't do that. but it's also rewarding just to kind of give yourself a break from being in that sort of student position and just sort of like mingle with people in the trade room or, you know, at the hotel bar or just, you know, sitting outside in the lobby and just give yourself time to not be in a chair staring at a projection.
Right. Yeah. Because one of the experiences that people have is that it can be a really intense and kind of exhausting experience over that few day period. And you can experience a certain amount of burnout after a certain period of time. Did you feel that, Joe, after your first or second conference?
I did. I did feel that. And especially at my first conference, I think I felt this weird pull. This is also kind of part of my personality. Like, I love to work hard and I love intensive experiences. So it was like this weird pull between, do I go to this lecture or do I just chill with this group of people who's decided they've had enough lecture for the day, and like, do I just hang out with them? You know what I mean? Like, should I be studious or should I be social?
Give in to peer pressure?
Right. And I was like, this is kind of a weird feel. Like, that's another thing I didn't expect of just, you know, people just being like, oh yeah, I'm just going to chill now. And, I was pleasantly surprised to find, that when I did just say, okay, well, I'll just skip that lecture and I'm just going to hang out, it was so much fun. And again, like sitting around a table with professional astrologers whose work you've only seen online, just speaking to them as people, I feel like I learned as much as I would have in a lecture, just in a different way, because you really get a more personal view of how these astrologers interact and just how they think about astrology in general. And so, yeah, that's definitely something I experienced.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a really important point, because even though we're kind of drawing a distinction earlier between the educational aspect of conferences versus the social aspect, there is a lot of overlap there, because sometimes just talking to people one-on-one is educational, and you're learning things just in and of itself by building those connections.
The social and educational aspects of conferences are much more like interwoven than they are distinctive or separate.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. So, and you know, that's definitely something I know that more experienced astrologers, there might be a tendency for newer astrologers to go to the conference and be more nose to the grindstone in terms of like attending every single lecture, of which they're like back to back, and there's like four lectures a day plus the keynotes plus workshops, and that's especially more typical if they haven't built up any social connections. Whereas definitely I've noticed that the longer that people have been in the community, that sometimes there's a tendency for more established astrologers, especially if they've been to a lot of conferences and they've seen a lot of the presentations and are kind of familiar with the topics already, to not attend as many talks, but instead to go and focus more on the social aspect, especially because then at these conferences, it's like you're catching up with old friends that you have seen, you know, at the previous conference, and you want to see how they've been since that time. And so you're reestablishing connections that are already there.
Yeah, but listen, also those professional astrologers are probably also trying to find time to finish their presentations in their room.
Right. That is the mistake that I frequently make, which is the last minute. My procrastination goes all the way up until the last minute before the lecture actually begins.
It's not good, Chris.
All right, is that where you're at usually as well?
I usually finish before I leave. Before I leave to go to the conference, I'm usually finished. But, you know, I do know certain people that I will not name who are regularly on your podcast, who are not as prepared.
That was a thing too, like hearing someone say, you know, like, oh, well, we're going to go grab dinner. Do you want to come? Oh, no, I got to go finish my lecture. And like noob astrologer Joe is like, oh, what? They're not completely prepared. Right. And it's just like this, it's kind of funny, but or like these are all just normal people too. You know, like they're brilliant minds and all this stuff, but they've got lives. They've, the you people know, maybe who, they procrastinated. It's just kind of fun to see that.
My heart goes out to the people who are like, who really want to be in a lecture to like support a friend or like are interested in their topic. And they're sitting in the back with their laptop because they're also working on their presentation at the same time.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's some conference real talk. This happens.
Yeah. There's a lot of that, especially some of the younger astrologers where they are going to support a friend or something like that, but they still have to like, you know, get their own presentation done. That is not an infrequent occurrence. So that's, you know, I guess that's a little bit more practitioner side of things, but in terms of lectures or some of the other topics that we meant to touch on with respect to that, that brings up some of those other sort of random things that you wouldn't think about or you wouldn't come to mind in terms of like stuff to be careful about, like during lectures. I don't know if that's a topic we should go into at this point. What do you guys think? Are there any things that come to mind in terms of like going to a lecture that you sort of watch out for or that you keep in mind or that you learned only after like either making a mistake or going to a few conferences?
Or how do you mean?
Like, you know, one of the things that one of the funny things that comes up is like, if you've done like a lot of conferences and you're kind of, I don't want to say jaded about it, but like what happens if you go into a lecture kind of not really knowing and then realizing that it's not your cup of tea, or that like this might not be a great lecture. If you like had to choose between two and you were conflicted and you didn't know which one to go with, and you go into one room and sit down and you're sort of there for 5 or 10 minutes and you realize that you made the wrong choice for whatever reason, there's often a question of etiquette about, you know, whether to excuse yourself and like leave, or whether just to stick it out. I don't know if you guys have had that experience.
I'm a bit more direct about that kind of stuff. And like, it's my conference experience too. And it doesn't hurt my feelings if people leave my lectures early for whatever reason.
So
I'll just like get up and quietly, excuse myself, and do whatever, my other thing was. But sometimes the longer lectures will have breaks, in the middle, and that can be a really good time to just not come back.
Right. Yeah. Just slip out then. And yeah.
Right. That's easy. I guess it's when you end up in like a very small room where it's just like 20 people. And in the process of like standing up 10 minutes into the lecture, you have to make eye contact with the speaker and then and then walk out the door. And I feel often like social pressure not to at that point. So I usually will just stick it out, but I wish I was more.
That's so nice of you. I think it also matters where the door is. Because if the door is towards the front, bad times. But if the door is at the back, then that's much easier.
Yeah, or sometimes it's a really creaky door that makes like a lot of noise as soon as
and everybody knows. And then the speaker's like, and Chris Brennan is just leaving my talk, thanks.
Right.
And then it's just on the recording for all posterity.
Right.
Yeah.
Like 30 years later, somebody's listening to that lecture. I mean, I've heard things like that on lecture recordings.
Have you really?
Well, I remember I got a lecture recording from 1990, and it was Joan Quigley, who is Ronald Reagan's astrologer, giving a talk shortly after her book about Reagan was published at a UAC in like 1990 or so. And she turns at one point and she says, Lee, switch it to the next slide or something like that. And she's like giving orders to Lee. And I realize that's actually Lee Lehman is who she's talking about.
Oh my gosh.
And so you'll hear these funny exchanges where, 20 or 30 years ago, it was like a much younger astrologer earlier in their career that's doing something. And then who now in retrospect is like a much larger figure in the community.
Oh, that's kind of adorable.
I would pay money for Lee Lehman to like change my slides for me.
Right.
You'd have to.
At this point, you would have to, yeah.
I don't know if that would happen. You'd have to phrase it in the form of a horary question, and then
Layman change my... How much do I need to pay Layman to change my presentation?
My slides.
Right. Yeah. Oh, so, so that was one. I mean, I know in terms of... It wasn't quite restricted to conference, to lecture etiquette, but I know there was like one other thing that you had thought about, Joe, in terms of that sometimes newer astrologers don't realize, or in terms of like different sort of quasi-social faux pas at conferences that can sometimes come up.
Right. So I've noticed, especially when I've met younger people at conferences, younger astrologers who are new to the in-person community, sometimes it's... you can build up this perception that like when you're with a bunch of astrologers, you speak astrology all the time. And that's like all you ever talk about. It's a huge part of what everybody talks about. Obviously, that's why they're there. But it's not usually part of a normal or polite introduction to start listing like your natal chart placements to somebody right up front. You can, but it's not something where it's like, that's what astrologers do. And I know if I had gone to a conference, much earlier in my, much earlier in my studies, I probably would have done that very same thing and been like, oh, I'm Joe and this is, every planet placement in my chart. And it's important to keep in mind that some people, and it's easy to forget this when you're excited about the practice and you're excited about astrology. Some people are very private with their charts and they don't really want to exchange that chart information just right after shaking your hand. So that's just something to keep in mind. A lot of times people will end up talking about their charts or people will ask you about your chart, but it'll happen organically and it'll happen naturally. So it's just kind of, yeah, it's kind of like an awkward social faux pas to go up to somebody and start talking about your chart right away.
Sure. Yeah. And that really, it varies from person to person or like context to context, but it's definitely.
Some people are totally cool with that and they'll just, launch right into that too, but it's just something to be aware of.
A lot of times that just kind of comes up organically in a conversation anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where like somebody will inquire about this or that, and then you can share that. But I know that a lot of times, like, we talk about our astrology in an attempt to relate to other people mm-hmm. that are at the conference. But I mean, I know for me, and this might sound really terrible, so buckle up, like, I get tired of talking about astrology after a little bit. Like, I'm sorry that no, to that's... say that. But like, after doing a lecture for an hour, 90 minutes to 2 hours, I kind of don't want to talk about astrology again for a little bit.
Right. Well, that's one of the tricky things being especially a professional astrologer is that if you're a professional astrologer, then that means that astrology is not just something you're passionate about, but it's also like your job. Mm-hmm. And so, especially if somebody comes up to you and literally like hands you a copy of their chart and you've just met them and they say,
"Has that happened to you, Chris?"
I've watched it happen. It's always amusing to watch at like conferences because it's like, it's something that comes from like Joe was saying privately earlier, that it always comes from a good place, but it's sure. something that typically you only see newer astrologers do. Like, you don't usually see like Rob Hand walk up and like hand people his chart.
That would be amazing.
If right. Rob Hand handed me his chart and he was like, "What do you think of this aspect?" I'd be like, "Let's have a seat and let's talk about it." No, that's important to mention. It's always coming from a good place. It's always, like Ryan mentioned, it's a way to seek connection. It's an icebreaker. Yeah. But just trust, if you think this, might be something that you would do or would have done, trust that like the ice will be broken anyway. These people are so nice. Like, that's something that I was so welcomed with open arms by all these people. Like, I remember walking up to Kelly Surtees and Sam Reynolds and Christopher Renstrom, and they all just like shook my hand and gave me a hug, and like no icebreaker was really needed because
I mean, the best icebreaker you can give at an astrology conference is to be like, "This is my first conference."
Absolutely. Right. And they'll be like, "Hey, come sit with us, let's hang out, let's get to know each other." That's a really good point, Ryan. That is the best icebreaker you could have.
Yeah. And that actually leads us to another topic. But just before we get off of it, sometimes to backpedal a little bit, sometimes at certain conferences, like at NORWAC, they will give you an opening where on your name tag, sometimes they'll have a blank spot where you can list like your sun, moon, and rising sign. And that is like an okay instance to like share chart details, or sometimes mm-hmm. to open that conversation, because it can also indicate other people if they put that on their name tag that are like open to like having a dialogue about their chart or about your chart placements or what have you.
Yeah.
So, just depends, but it's something you have to sort of feel out, depending on the context. So what was the last point? Cause that actually was going to lead to a really good transition point. What was the very last thing that you said, Joe?
Oh, I was just saying how, I was kind of maybe not intimidated, but I just wasn't sure what to expect when I saw all these, quote unquote famous astrologers, and they were just so welcoming and they like invited me to hang out with them and all that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. That's perfect. Yeah. So, and that brings up a very important point. And this is actually something I've been struggling with trying to figure out, which is, there's different personality types, and there's some people that might be like extroverts that have no problem like going into a group or a conference setting like that and just introducing themselves and striking up conversations and starting to, make friendships like right away. But there might be other people that might be more introverted or somewhere in between, where going to a conference, especially if it's your first time and you don't know anybody, or there's not anybody there that you know from online previously, it can be kind of hard to make those initial contacts and to like strike up some of those conversations, because sometimes you really just have to go for it. And it may or may not even necessarily be successful, depending on the context. But that's something I've been trying to figure out more and more, how to find ways to make that easier for people. Because I realized that if I was coming into the astrological community now, or especially, let's say, like 10 years ago, before I was doing speaking stuff and was more introverted, I think I would have a hard time making some of those connections. And so I've been trying to find ways and think of ways that people can do that and start to build some of those relationships in a way that's a little bit easier. So I know you guys are both involved in organizations that kind of help to facilitate some of those social interactions, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, so saying that, but one thing I'll say is that if somebody at the conference asks you to like go somewhere and do something, then just say yes, because we met an individual at SOTA who, I don't remember if it was his first conference or if it was his first time at SOTA or something, but like I had seen him at another lecture that I was in, and then I happened to like pass him down the hall, and I'd always kind of just like seen him by himself, and I was like, hey, a bunch of us are going to go to the bar like right now. Do you want to come with us?
Yeah.
Right. And it was just, and he's just like, yeah, I'll be there. And I was like, great. And so like, I mean, just be open to that kind of stuff, especially if you're more introverted.
Yeah. And it was like maybe the second day of the conference. Cause I had seen him around too. Yeah. I think it was Saturday. Cause I was like, do you know who that person is? Like, I haven't seen him with anybody. We should invite him somewhere. And he was awesome. Yeah. He was introverted, but he was so happy to have an invitation and just kind of join the crowd.
Also, if you are like a newer or younger individual and you see other newer or younger astrologers, talk to them because they're probably us.
Yeah.
and it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point, yeah. Ryan.
And there's like a good set of instructions there for both sides, which is that if you're somebody that's going to a conference, you don't know anybody yet, then try and especially during lunches or around dinner in the evenings when the lectures are over, try and go to the social spaces like the bar or the lobby where usually there'll be like a cluster of most of the astrologers hanging out. And, you know, that can be kind of hard because sometimes you can end up like standing around if you don't know anybody. But then from the other side, I definitely like to encourage, and I'd like to see more of this happening, which is that if you're an established astrologer that's going to one of these conferences or astrology enthusiast or whatever, that's made some friends or whatever, and you see somebody who's sort of hanging out by themselves or doesn't seem to be connecting with anyone, to go up and introduce yourself, because oftentimes there will be newer astrologers that don't know anybody at conferences. And that's a great opportunity just to say, you know, is this your first conference or, you know, what have you, and strike up a conversation and build some of those connections, or to help somebody out who, you know, maybe hasn't had the opportunity yet to do something like that.
I mean, you know, we talked a bit ago about like why conferences are important or, you know, that kind of stuff. And one of the main things is that they're supposed to be for community building. And, you know, going back to how conferences are different or why they're better than, you know, online interactions, you just don't have that same sense of community building like that. You just don't have that connection. And, you know, all of us as astrologers ought to be, and I think some organizations are doing this better than others, ought to be looking for making these new, or bringing in these new additions to our community and being like, yes, you know, we want you here. You're welcome. You know, you're valid. And, you know, you should have fun and enjoy yourself here. This isn't, you know, this isn't study hall. Conferences are not study hall. They're supposed to be this horizon expanding experience where, you know, yes, the information that you receive from lectures is important, but also that connecting with people is what brings you back next time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. A lot of people, especially people who have come to their first conference or their second conference, often describe this experience that I don't know if anyone's ever fully been able to articulate it or if this is the right way to articulate it, but they often refer to it as like they feel like they finally found their tribe, or that there's some really visceral or sort of like primal sort of experience of finding like a group of people that they belong to. Because typically for most people, if you study astrology, it's kind of this weird isolated thing.
You lose the ability to talk to other people. Yeah. Been there.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's just that, you know, most other people in your life, if you're a normal person, you'll have other normal people around you, and they're not necessarily going to be into this weird sort of out there thing, which, you know, let's all just admit that astrology on some level is, even as a valid phenomenon, it's weird. Still incredibly weird that it works.
It's totally perceived as weird. It's like completely absurd. Yeah.
Right. And so that in and of itself, just most people's experience as a result of that, and as a result of the fact that astrology is not viewed as a legitimate phenomenon by a large portion of the world, immediately sort of can make the study of astrology kind of isolated or isolating. Mm-hmm. And so the experience that you have when you go to one of these conferences is radically different, because suddenly it goes from maybe you just know one or two people tops, like in person locally, that do astrology, or maybe all of your friends who do it are online, to suddenly you're in a room with like 100 other people that are all talking about astrology. And there's something tremendously empowering, but also sort of comforting about that, because suddenly, you know, you're not alone in doing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, that's huge.
So,
and go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, one thing that might sound kind of silly, but helped me feel a lot better at my first conference, is that I had added a lot of people on Facebook before I went. And this is, you know, within the months before. It wasn't like the week before. But so people, I know, like, I just go on this like rampage.
Mass added astrologers. Maybe I'll see these people at Soda.
Yeah. I just go through Chris Brennan's friend list and like add everybody. No, not really. That did not
happen. I think I did that in real life.
I think I'm gonna, you know, decline further comment on that. But these people had seen my face, you know, they'd seen my face before, and it was like, oh yeah, I recognize you, you know, on Facebook. And I knew Ryan before I went to my first conference. So that was really nice to have somebody that I knew there to introduce me to people, because I'm very extroverted. I'm a very social person. But even I felt shy in that context of just like, oh my gosh, all these people, everyone is talking about astrology. It's exciting, but it was kind of scary to just walk up to somebody. But when they kind of recognized me and, you know, oh, you know Ryan, that made it a lot easier. So if there are any astrology groups on Facebook or somewhere where you can connect with people beforehand, that can kind of make it a little easier and be able to say, you know, oh yeah, I recognize your name and, you know, and your face, and it's nice to meet you in person. So seems kind of like a small thing, but I think that's helpful.
Yeah, definitely. So definitely easier if you have a friend there or somebody that you can meet with ahead of time, if you can establish any sort of connections with that, or just like establish with somebody online that they're also going to this conference and maybe meeting up with them in person once you get there.
Yeah, so, definitely.
So is Ryan how you ended up at the first Soda conference a couple years ago?
So yeah, Ryan is the reason I went to Soda the first time in 2016. He encouraged me to apply for the AFAN scholarship, actually, because I had actually planned to go to NORWAC that same year, but I literally just chickened out. I was like, I'm too scared.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like had the browser tab open. I was like looking at flights and hotels, but I was just too scared. Like, I hadn't met you in person yet, Ryan. So I was just like, I was just way too freaked out. I was like, this is a lot of money to spend. You know, this is, I don't know, you know, if it's going to be worth it. I don't know how much I'll get out of it. But you really encouraged me to go to Soda, and I kind of just trusted you on that. And I'm so glad that you kind of like lit that fire under me and encouraged me to go, because it's like, once you go, kind of like we were mentioning earlier, once you go to a conference, you get it. You're like, oh, right. This is huge. Like, I want to do this every year. Like, mm-hmm. I can't wait for the next one. And like, you have just so much respect for the people that put these on year after year. But yeah, Ryan encouraged me to go. That's one thing Ryan's really good about, is reaching out to especially newer and younger astrologers and making them feel welcome and getting them involved and integrated into the community, because there's really no replacement for that feeling. So yeah, it's all because of Ryan.
Oh, please.
Right. It's true. Well, that's really funny hearing that, because then Ryan's passing that down.
Yeah,
because that was,
yeah, because I got it from Lisa and you and Patrick, because that's why I went to my first one, was because Patrick Watson encouraged me a lot, and you too, and you as well, Chris, to go to the AFA conference. And Patrick agreed to be my roommate, which helped with costs and stuff like that. And that's where I met like everybody else in the world. And I got introduced to Lisa, who was on the AFAN board at that time, and she told me about, you know, AFAN scholarships, and UAC 2012 was coming up. And so I was able to get one of the AFAN scholarships to go to that. And then, you know, ever since then, I've been trying to push that out to other people who are interested in going, who maybe, you know, don't feel like they can afford it. It's like, oh, well, we actually have things in place to help those people. And I love giving people money that's not mine. Many of us do. So it's a very nice exercise to, you know, on the one hand, help people do, you know, help people get places they didn't think they could go, but also sort of having been the recipient of it myself to sort of pass that along to, you know, other new people is like really fulfilling for me.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And that seems to be part of the generational aspect of astrology because, you know, because it's at the conferences where the newer generations of astrologers actually fully interface with the established generations of astrologers.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah, it's really important. Because that's actually the establishment, to whatever extent. I remember, Ryan, seeing you get in an argument with somebody a few months ago on Reddit or something she was like convinced that there was like an establishment astrology community and there was like her as like a rebel who was outside of the establishment. And you were trying to explain that there's not that much of an establishment and it's much more free form than anybody realizes, even from an organizational standpoint. But to whatever extent there is any sort of like astrological establishment or like established community of people that's coherent, it really is at the conferences, to the extent that you have older astrologers or astrologers who have been to multiple conferences that meet up periodically, you know, every year or every few years at these gatherings. And that really does become the interface point between and why it's important to get newer astrologers there, because that's when they actually do get fully integrated into the established community by, which is basically just a social community, by making those connections.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. So I noticed that that's one of the things that happens, is that once people have that experience of sometimes being helped in order to get to those things, and that's often necessary, is having some sort of encouragement or some sort of help or some sort of aid on the part of more established astrologers that have gone through it, towards newer astrologers where it's not something they've done before. And oftentimes once that happens and then they get going, they often will pass that down to other people in the future. And that's just part of the, to whatever extent there is a sort of astrological tradition that's alive.
That's what I was going to say.
Right. That's what tradition is.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's, you know, there was probably some aspect of that, you know, in the past and in the ancient traditions as well, or in the Renaissance or what have you, with like students and teachers and things like that.
Mm. I'm imagining mashallah paying Saul's plane ticket.
Right. To go to the big conference in Baghdad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh man.
So, I mean, so that's important. I guess there's a few other things to sort of tick off before we move off of those, in terms of just what conferences are like on the ground and, you know, why they're important. So what are some other things that you can do in terms of, you know, connecting with other people or making, like, establishing some of those social connections?
Well, one thing that I hope conferences do better with in the future, and that Joe has sort of initiated with SOTA, is better social media presences.
Absolutely.
Because this is something that astrology sucks at. I'm sorry.
Right.
That there's not a whole lot of social media presence, which is why I think that a lot of people who are interested in astrology, one, don't realize that conferences are things.
Yeah.
Two, people who are more into astrology miss out on like certain announcements, which is where you kind of get the idea that it's much more insular than it is, because like, what I mean by this is conferences sending out requests for like speaker applications. You know, if that word doesn't get out, then it can feel kind of insular because it's kind of the same people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And just having an online place for people who are interested in the conference to be able to keep abreast of information and changes as it comes out, because that's where you can get situations like Joe mentioned, to where you meet people in real life that you've had some sort of a connection with on social media, like they recognize your face or name or something. And that can, having a social media place for conferences can help with that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something we've lagged behind just because, you know, the more established astrologers that are organizing the conference typically tend to be the older sort of like Pluto and Leo generation. And not all of them have sort of fully embraced some of the like social networking stuff quite yet. So some of that stuff is still slowly getting integrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing I would say to speak to that is, one of the first things I did like several years ago when I learned that astrology conferences existed was I looked for people who vlogged them. Like I went to YouTube and tried to find videos, because, you know, like I'm a young person and you can like YouTube things as easily as you can Google them. And so I was just like, oh, maybe somebody like vlogged like one of these conferences and I can see kind of like what it's like when you get there. And I found next to nothing. I found like some lecture recordings of like a Rob Hand lecture at like the Blast Astrology conference from like a long time ago. And right. I was just like, man, this kind of just looks like study hall, you know, kind of what we're saying. It's not always just study hall, these conferences. And so when I actually went to my first conference in 2016, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. Like, this is not, you know, like people need to know that this is what this is like. Cause I might not have chickened out on NORWAC that one year if I had really seen, just how social and how fun these things are. Shout out to Wonderbright though. Her efforts at NORWAC, the picture she takes, that was one of the things that made me want to go to NORWAC, was because that looked really fun. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Her synastic snaps.
Synastic snaps. That's what it is. Yeah, that's excellent. But yeah, that's part of my initiative with the Association for Young Astrologers and for SOTA as well. I'm social media manager and program designer again for 2018 for SOTA, is to really get that out there and like let people know like what this is really like, how much fun it really is, and just kind of bring it to people's awareness, just so it's not, you know, official conference pictures or whatever, but it's like real stuff, you know, taken by, you know, my real iPhone, you know, and put on Instagram or wherever. But yeah, I think that's important. And I hope to bring more of that to the community myself in whatever capacity I can.
Yeah, definitely. That would be awesome. I mean, and there's been attempts at different points often that are not sure, hugely successful to like do like a hashtag on Twitter for certain conferences. Oh, and yeah. Like every once in a while, you'll see one or two people or a few people doing little things like that. But that's definitely the other piece of getting more younger astrologers into the community, is just they would be more comfortable, you know, doing things like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, so that's something we're working on. And then Ryan, with your organization, one of the other sort of social things that they really do and are good at is organizing things like hospitality suites at conferences, yes. Right?
Yes. Hospitality suites are often like little clubs that an organization will sponsor during the conference. Like for SOTA, AFAN, or the Association for Astrological Networking, usually runs it. Actually, I think we're the only ones who have in the past, unless I'm mistaken. And it's usually like a Friday, Saturday night after everybody's eaten dinner, and are back at the conference, and it's like 8 o'clock and nobody wants to go to bed. You just go to the hospitality suite and there's drinks and snacks and, you know, everybody else is there, and you just kind of, you know, hang out and talk to people and meet people and stay up way too late and hate yourself in the morning. and it's real, like, it's a lot of fun. Like, they're usually really well located and really well advertised that this is where it's going to be at this time. And there's really no excuse for not going unless you just like don't feel well or something.
Yeah. So one of the things definitely is to locate and identify if there is like an AFAN, which is the Association for Astrological Networking, if they have a hospitality suite at that conference, or sometimes if there's just other parties that will be going on in somebody else's like private hotel.
Yeah, in somebody else's room.
Yeah. I mean, those are good social opportunities. And then sometimes there'll be like a dance party at some conferences, or there'll be like a people meeting up at the bar, or sometimes there'll be like an open bar after the, after like a keynote lecture or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point to mention too. There's usually like one night where there's a banquet or like a dance or something, like on a, like a Saturday night or something like that.
Yeah. At least I think banquets are extra typically for the conference.
Oh,
cost.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get a banquet ticket and everybody just gets to like sit down and eat together. And sometimes there's music or like other entertainment. And that's usually really fun.
Yeah, and that actually brings up a good point, which is that that's a tricky thing in terms of meals, because with most conferences, you can buy as part of your conference package, you can buy like a meal ticket, which will be for like lunches and dinners, and sometimes you'll have to pay extra for like a banquet that takes place to the end of the conference, and whether that's recommended, because you can kind of go either way about whether that's a good idea. I tend to side more with saying if you can afford it, then it's a good idea to buy the meals packages, because then sometimes you're sort of thrown into, or you're forced basically into a social situation where there will be a large banquet table with like 10 or 12 chairs around it, and everyone just sort of gets randomly assigned most of the time. And that can sometimes sort of lead to meeting new people and sort of forcing some new social interactions that you might not have otherwise if you just go to a conference and then like go and eat out by yourself every night or something like that.
I think the banquet is like, as far as all of the sort of extras that conferences have, I think the banquet is probably the one that I would recommend people spending a little bit more to get if that's an option for them. Just because it is like the big formal sit down dinner of the conference, essentially. But like, other than that, just go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Having the freedom to kind of like, you know, be able to just grab something from the store nearby and just chill in your room if you want to, you know, that's always a good option to have.
And that's a really good point, because that's the tricky part, is that it's often such a huge financial investment, especially for younger astrologers, that you're often looking for ways to cut corners as much as possible or cut out costs. And food is one of the ones where that's possible, and like not buying, you know, banquet tickets for every night or something like that is one area where you can get by not doing that and therefore spending a little less. But that means one of the things that everybody should do as soon as they show up to a conference or before they even get there is try to identify if there's any like grocery stores within walking distance of the hotel is usually a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or a lot of times the hotels will have shuttles that can take you there in off hours.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a good point. Or shuttles from the airport so that you don't have to take like a cab and pay extra money to get from the airport to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that actually brings us then to our next sort of general area, which is that conferences, the financial aspect of things, which is that conferences can be kind of expensive. And so we should talk about that and some of the first why that is and what some of the things you need to pay for. And then secondly, some strategies for covering those costs and defraying those costs. So typically there's really just like three main things that you need to cover, or three primary things that you need to cover as expenses for conferences. So the first one is just buying a pass to the conference itself, which is the pass just is like your entrance fee to get into the conference, which basically just includes the lectures, which are the core of the conference, the educational component. And that's your primary expense. And usually that's like $200 or $300 basically, or somewhere in that range, right?
That seems right.
Right. Yeah. And usually the earlier you register, the lower the price. So yeah, planning ahead is really helpful in that case.
Yeah. That's a really, really important point, that one really easy way of defraying expenses or spending less is that the earlier or the further ahead of the conference that you buy your ticket, the cheaper it's going to be, because it gets progressively more and more expensive the closer you get to the day of the event.
Right.
So early bird prices are really helpful. So that's your first expense. And with that, the workshops, the pre and post conference workshops, are separate expenses. So those are seen as like add-ons or like optional things if you want to do one of those intensives, but it's not usually included in the price of just a basic conference ticket.
And they're usually like super specific, like workshop technique things. So it's like, if you're not already sort of interested in that, then, you know, you can probably pass up on it unless it's something that just sounds super fascinating.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And especially,
and they also tend to be more advanced too. So probably not good for like the newer astrologers or first time conference goers.
Sure. Yeah. Especially depending on the topic. And because it also adds additional costs, because typically the conference itself will just be, let's say, 3 or 4 days, usually over the course of a weekend. But the workshops are usually, you have to add a whole separate day on either before that main conference sort of cluster of days or after that day. So that leads you to have to spend extra money in order to go in earlier or to stay later than you otherwise would.
Yeah.
So that's your first expense, is just buying a pass to the conference itself. Second expense is getting there, which typically for most people involves buying a plane ticket or basically whatever it takes to get to the conference. So your travel expense. And then the third major expense is paying for a hotel room or staying somewhere, basically, which usually means paying for a hotel room while you're there, plus any related food expenses, which either you can tack that on as part of the hotel room expense or put that separately as like a fourth expense. But those are basically the main three. So those are the basic expenses. And as a result of that, it can get obviously kind of expensive. So the conference pass itself is like $200 or $300. You know, a plane ticket, depending on how close you are to the location, can be anywhere from what, like best case scenario, like let's say $100 to $400 or $500 maybe for a plane ticket, let's say.
Yeah.
Does that sound right, more or less?
Yeah, probably closer to that upper end, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what, like Seattle to Denver has been like $400 lately, so I guess that's, it's like surprisingly expensive. Yeah.
I think I paid like $258 for my ticket to from Dallas to Buffalo.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Sure.
It's like, hey.
Right, so there's that, and then finally the hotel room itself, it's typically like maybe around $100 a night.
Yeah,
and and you're staying there for what, at least probably like four nights or so, give or take?
Yeah, three or four. A lot of the hotel rooms, though, will have, like, they'll be discounted for the conference. So make sure that you mention that when you book your hotel room.
Sure. And then finally, there's the related food expenses, which either some of those expenses are going to come from buying, if you do buy like the banquet ticket or any of the meals that are like the community meals, like lunches or dinners that you can buy from the conference itself, which means you'll be sitting in a social setting versus, you know, if you just buy food there locally, like going to a local coffee shop or something, eating in the hotel. Usually there's like a restaurant in the hotel that can usually tend to be kind of expensive.
Yeah, that's more expensive. But one thing I want to say about the room really quickly, or about hotel, is that I really encourage people going to a conference to stay in the conference hotel.
Yes.
Tends to be a little bit cheaper than surrounding hotels because you will get like the conference group discount thing. But there's also like a safety thing involved in this, because a lot of these events or things can run late into the night. And the last thing that you need to worry about is how you're going to get to your hotel down the street at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I really just recommend, unless you have like a crazy good deal or you can stay with a family member, just to stay in the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're on the fence about that, I mean, I would recommend you do anything possible or anything you can to make it possible for you to stay in that hotel. Anything possible. Do as much as you can to stay in the hotel. Cause like, there will be a time when your second wind does not come and your brain's filled with astrology and you've been socializing, you know, for a whole weekend and you just want to go back to your room. And if your room's down the street, you're going to have a bad time. So yeah, it's totally worth it to stay in the conference hotel, in my opinion.
Yeah. And that's definitely also important, not just for necessarily even just for a safety reason, even though that's a good consideration, but also it often will interfere with your ability to socialize if, you know, if your room, wherever you're staying is like a few miles away and you need to leave there by, let's say, a certain point each night, then you may not be able to like stay up with everybody or go out as freely because you're not staying on the same premises where everyone else is staying.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, that's a really good recommendation. So those are kind of the primary things. Those are the three expenses. And the trick then is just figuring out, you know, how to defray those as much as possible for a lot of people, unless it's just not an issue with you, in which case, you know, just
congratulations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people do treat it more like a vacation or something where instead of, you know, especially people where, you know, maybe astrology is not your primary profession or you have like another profession that brings in like a decent income, but you're very passionate about astrology. And so, you know, maybe once a year, instead of going to like, you know, Disney World or something, they'll go to an astrology conference.
What life that must be.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a pretty good deal.
And I mean, I think of my conferences as like subsidized vacations.
Yeah, I mean, well,
but I speak at them. So, you know, that's why I think of them that way. And, you know, most everybody doesn't have that opportunity.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because for professional astrologers, they're both, you know, meeting up with friends and having fun and stuff. But then they're also like work if you have to give a lecture or like a workshop or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of like relaxation or vacation. But for just normal attendees, for a lot of people, even though it's intense, it is kind of like going to a vacation. And sometimes you can, you know, they're held in like a major city oftentimes. So you can, if you want to, like go out and do sightseeing.
Totally.
Before or after and sort of check out the city. So, but for those that, you know, are new to conferences and do need to defray expenses and kind of find a way to get there by making it cheaper, there's a number of different options. So, and it basically just involves one of those three or four expenses and finding ways to cut those down. So, Joe already mentioned for the conference pass that, you know, the early bird registration, the earlier you register, the cheaper it's going to be. And that's a huge thing just in terms of getting the price down of the conference pass itself. So usually it's a good idea to like research ahead of time and find out what conferences are happening over the course of the next year, you know, decide one ahead of time and then book it as soon as possible, at least to the conference ticket. That way you can get that for a relatively low price.
Definitely.
And I mean, in terms of that, scholarships are probably the next step for conference tickets, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's really all that there is after that is like AFAN has annual scholarships that we give. We usually give around six to where four of those will be like specifically to help people get to conferences. And they're in like different denominations of awards and things like that, but they're annual. So if you have, you know, your eye on a conference in the future that you could maybe make, if you had an extra, you know, $500, then this is really like your opportunity to apply and get them. A lot of these will at least cover the conference pass, or so you don't even have to worry about that. Like a third of your expenses is eliminated. And they may also have extra award money that is beyond that amount that they will give you to be able to subsidize like travel and hotel costs.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and that's so great.
And that was how you said that you attended UAC.
That's how I got to UAC, yes.
So you became or you were a member of AFAN and you applied. Did you have to do like an essay or anything?
Yes, that's actually a good point. Yes, you have to have a current membership for AFAN. You know, we do our best to support our members in doing what they need to do to connect to the astrological community at large, which conferences is, as Chris astutely pointed out, sort of the I just lost my word, so that's fine. But anyway,
yeah,
you have to apply. And it's usually like an essay type format where I think our guidelines are like, you know, tell us why you got into astrology, tell us why you want to go to this conference specifically, and, you know, talk to us about your current financial position, like what's keeping you from being able to go there financially. And then that's really all that we ask. And then we get to like AFAN gets together as a board and just sort of votes and decides who, you know, should get what award. We try to pick awards that can help the right people. Like if you only need a couple hundred dollars to get to go to this conference, then we try to make sure that those people get that, so that the people who need a little bit more financial assistance, we have a bit more money in the pot to get them there, essentially.
Right.
Sure. And that's one of the great things that AFAN does, and that's unique about it as an organization, yes, is that you guys actually have like a mandate in your bylaws that you have to give away like pretty much all of your income or something like that through scholarships and other things, right?
I don't remember the specifics of it, but like last year, I think we gave away like between $2,000 and $2,500, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a pretty good amount to get people to conferences and stuff. And yeah, we're the only organization that does them regularly, at least. We do them annually, so...
Sure. So that's AFAN, and that's one organization. But then there's other organizations that give out scholarships, both national ones and also sometimes local astrological organizations. And then there's also sometimes the conference organizers themselves will put out different scholarships. And I know, Joe, that you collected and got together a few different ones that are available in the next year, right?
Yeah, it looks like for UAC, because, you know, everybody's getting really excited for UAC 2018, because it's been, since 2012, since there's been a UAC. UAC is offering a dozen scholarships to people who need some financial aid. And we can link to that in the show notes. And there also is a group discount option that they have going on, where I believe if you get together with your local community, and that there's, I think, five or more of you, you can get a group discount for bringing some local astrologers or bringing some people from your astrology school with you to the conference. So it kind of just varies from conference to conference, from what I understand. And I believe I'm not totally positive if NORWAC has specific scholarship opportunities for their conference in March. I would have to double check on that. But I do know UAC has both a scholarship opportunity happening and a group discount thing happening.
Okay. So UAC does. And yeah, I think NORWAC, like last year, I know Sam Reynolds, who's been on the podcast.
The diversity scholarship.
Yeah, they've done that for the last couple of years, a diversity scholarship, which has been really great. And I know the organizers of NORWAC supported that. And that was one of the scholarships that they offered over the past couple of years. So sometimes just looking at the organizer's website or their social media accounts can give you some information about that.
But that's what I mean about astrology needing to be more with the social media stuff, because people don't know about these.
Yeah.
Like they don't.
Yeah.
So now they will, because they listen to the podcast. But I mean, like we've had years with AFAN where we've barely had enough people apply to meet the number of scholarships that we offered.
Yeah, and that's actually a really great point, because what I realized at one point is that oftentimes people assume that tons of people have already applied, and so there's no need to apply. But in fact, it's often the opposite, that most of the scholarships in the astrological community have so few applicants that it often just goes out to like whoever applies.
Exactly.
So that's
Definitely do that. Yeah, definitely do that. Because I thought the exact same thing in 2016, and Ryan was like, no, listen, just apply. Like, you know, there aren't hundreds of people that got in line before you. And I'm really glad that I did. So yeah, that's a great point. Just go for it. You don't have nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Right. So there's that. And then also, this is also not typically very well known, but or even more obscure of a fact, is that sometimes local astrological groups or local astrological chapters in various cities will sometimes offer their own scholarships for conferences. So that's, I know back in 2009 or 2010, I think that Lisa won a local scholarship that was put forward by the Rocky Mountain Astrologers Group, which meets every month in Boulder, and they gave her a scholarship to go to a major conference. I think it was like an ESAR conference or something like that.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's good to check in with your local astrology group as well, because occasionally you'll find one of them offering some sort of scholarship, and all of those can be hugely helpful, especially in defraying that primary expense, which is just the pass to the conference itself. Because oftentimes that's one of the primary things that the scholarships will cover, is the conference ticket. Although some of them, I know like the AFAN scholarship, for example, will sometimes help to cover, the plane ticket, or sometimes part of the hotel room or something like that, I think, in some instances, right?
Yes.
Yes. Give or take. Maybe. It really depends or varies.
It depends on what your financial award amount is. Because like if you win a $500 award and the conference pass is only like, you know, $250, then you get that extra $250.
Sure.
And then that's your plane ticket. But yeah, another way you can cut costs is you can actually be staff at the conference. And this is one that I don't think a lot of people know about either. Mostly it's through room monitoring. If you apply to be a room monitor, then you are an individual who sort of monitors a room. You are assigned a room that a speaker is in, and you sort of like check badges, and you assist the speaker with whatever they need to do to give a good lecture. The downside for this is while it can get you to the conference, or, you know, have your conference past cost like slashed or paid or whatever, is that you're kind of stuck wherever they assign you. So you may not necessarily get to experience the lectures that you really want to be there for. But, you know,
That said, it still gets you to the conference.
It still gets you in the door. The speakers are still there and you can still talk to them.
Right. There's still all the in-between time. So like once you're kind of off duty at night, you can still hang out with people and meet people. And so that's like that's a really, really good option. If you're just desperate to get to a conference and meet some people, check out volunteer opportunities for room monitors and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. And I think most young astrologers that I know, that's often how they'll get their foot in the door. Or at least I know a lot of my contemporaries, that's how we first started going to conferences, was by volunteering and doing room monitoring or other sort of things like that, basically to work for the conference in exchange for a free pass. And my first conference was at Norwalk in 2006 or 2000, no, Norwalk in 2005 in Seattle. And I volunteered and they let me attend the conference for free in exchange for being a room recorder, a room monitor, like you guys are saying, and basically sitting in the rooms and starting the recording, starting and stopping it on time when the lecture started so that they would have a recording of the talk, as well as like counting the number of heads in the room. And if you basically do that, then in exchange, they give you a free pass. So the downside, like you said, is just that sometimes you can get stuck in a single room and have less control over picking your lecture topics. But
unfortunately, there is no right way to quietly excuse yourself politely.
Right. If you're a room monitor.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this lecture sucks. I'm out. Not going to happen.
I actually have to admit that I did do that once. I was the room monitor at the ESAR conference in 2005. It was probably my second conference, but there was an AYA, there was an Association for Young Astrologers panel that was taking place like right at the same time as this lecture that I was supposed to be monitoring. And so I couldn't get out of it. But they wanted me to sit on the panel. And so it was like my second conference. So I started the recorder and then like took off. Like,
oh, I have to go to the restroom for an hour and a half.
Yeah. And I think I just had somebody else who was sitting there, you know, watching the lecture and had no plans on leaving, like watch the recorder. And then I ended up on that panel and then came back and stopped the recorder afterwards. But
that's hysterical.
Now everybody knows.
Yeah. Now they know.
I would
not
recommend
Chris any more room volunteer opportunities.
Yeah. Everyone just thought you could be in two places at once and you just ruined the mystery.
Right. Yeah. I definitely would not invite me to be a room monitor in the future. luckily that was my last room monitor gig. And my long con, I mean, this is actually my defraying expenses tip. And this has been my plan. That's been a long-term, like decade-long plan, which is just get invited to speak at astrology conferences.
Yeah.
And that's actually a very good way of defraying costs.
Yeah. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, that's why, like, I think of conferences as sort of like subsidized vacations because, you know, you get paid to speak there. You know, usually that means you don't have to pay the conference price and they'll give you, you know, some money, a check.
Right. A relatively small check, but
yeah,
that's been my long con, is this whole thing is just an elaborate, sort of
ruse to get free conference tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the whole reason, you know, you wrote this book. It's all just for free conferences.
Right.
I feel like he was doing that before that happened.
The 700 page book. But no, that is definitely, if you are a professional astrologer and
or even an aspiring professional astrologer, because this is what the free speaking slots that we talked about earlier, like these are for you to get your foot in the door, to get that practice in and to sort of be evaluated as a potential paid speaker.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you are an aspiring professional astrologer, or if you're serious about doing that, then definitely trying to get speaking positions or trying to apply for free speaking positions can also be another way of, you know, going to conferences. So I was half joking about that, but also half serious. I
mean, it's a legitimate strategy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a legitimate strategy, especially if you are like serious about doing astrology as a profession, like you or I was from very early on, or from a point where we realized this is what we're going to do professionally and would like to be giving talks at conferences or what have you, or have something to say. So, I'm trying to think, is there anything else in terms of defraying expenses? So we talked about, you know, getting a pass to conferences and how to get discounts on that, or how to get a scholarship. We talked about what else did we talk about? I mean, it's really hard to defray the travel cost of the plane ticket. I mean, getting those earlier, especially more than 3 weeks ahead of time, because 3 weeks is always the point at which it really goes up. Sometimes
just fly early with that if you have to fly.
Right. Or sometimes you can find like other cheaper ways, like taking a bus or, if, you know, I've driven to conferences before for the Blast in 2008. Me and Nick Dagan-Best and our friend Meredith Garston and Kurt Manwaring, we all pooled our money and drove from Maryland, from like the East Coast all the way down to Arizona.
So
Wow. Yeah. How many hours was that, Chris?
I mean, it took us a few days. We didn't drive as hard as we could have, but that was a rough, that was a rough drive. Cause then you already get to the conference and you're exhausted by the time you even show up. So you've got to factor in things like that. But sometimes if you don't have a ton of money, you just, you got to do what you got to do in order to make it happen. And I know, you know, for the first few years of me attending conferences, I would do stuff like that. And I know other astrologers would do stuff like that, where you just, sometimes you got to suck it up in order to,
I mean, I thought you were going to tell us that you drove from Colorado and I was like, oh, that seems fine. And then you were like, oh, Maryland. And that's just like extreme mode.
Right. Yeah. That was extreme mode. Or like ESAR 2005, I showed up and I didn't have any money. So I was able to crash in a room with Nick Dagan-Best. And I had enough money to pay like my share of the room, but then I didn't bring any food money. So my plan was just not eat for
3 days
or something like that. Or I had like $20 or something. And so I really had to make $20, you know, stretch over the course of like a weekend or a week or
something like that.
Oh my God,
Chris, wow.
And so I was going to, the plan was just to like walk to a grocery store and buy some cheap food. And then it turned out that they booked a hotel in the middle of nowhere, and I had to walk for several miles to get to the hotel, the grocery store. So that was a weird experience, because actually on like the first or maybe second night, I met Alan Oaken, who is like one of my biggest, earliest like influences, because I bought like one of his books. His Complete Astrology book was like the second or first book that I ever bought. And I met him and I like shook his hand. And like, he looked at me and he was like, he reached over and shook my hand and he palmed me like $40. And he said, I have a feeling that you need this. And he just like gave me $40. And then like, that was the end. And I like looked at him and like thanked him. And that was basically how I survived that weekend. Cause I just showed up to this conference.
Oh my God.
Sort of empty. So, you know, sometimes, because of the astrological community, there you can find people that will, you know, do things like that, that will make things happen even under really strange and unique circumstances.
That is such a great story, Chris.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So it was always a really nice sort of gesture that he did. And so I've always tried to, you know, do similar things when
I
think
didn't
about
me $40.
Right. Well, I think we got you there though. We got you to that.
Yeah, you hooked me up. It's fine.
We got you to that 2011 conference and
UAC,
and then UAC.
Lisa, yeah.
Well, yeah, and then we roomed together, didn't we, in UAC 2012? Or one of those. I think we shared
it.
Okay. So yeah, so doing things like that, and that's both a lesson for younger astrologers, where sometimes just like try to make it happen and sometimes trust in the process, and sometimes you just have to walk into that abyss of going into, you know, a situation where you have no idea, really. You have a general idea, like listening to this podcast, but honestly, you have no idea what you're going to find, and just sort of trust that, you know, it's going to work out, or that you are going to have an experience that you're going to remember afterwards that will hopefully be good. And in many instances, like the story that you were talking about, Ryan, with your first conference, or Joe, your first conference, and talking about your trepidation going into it, finding out that it was worthwhile in the end, even though you couldn't have anticipated what you found while you were there, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so there's...
We're all there to make connections and to, you know, help each other and build this community. And I feel like, you know, I'll speak for myself, I guess, that if you make that effort to be included, then we'll do whatever we need to make that happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's part of what we're doing here now as part of we're younger astrologers, but we're becoming, you know, part of or becoming the established astrological community and the generation that will take over from the generations that are currently have been around for a few decades. But that's part of, you know, what then we have to do, or the obligation that we have, is to help bring in and make it easier for some of those other astrologers that are just coming into the community to find their ways in.
Yeah. And that's always the hard part. Because I feel like the astrological community in general does a really kind of poor job of nurturing its young. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's important for us, as we're sort of on that line of becoming, you know, more established or what have you, to do our best to not forget that.
Right. Yeah. And that was,
and to make up for it.
Yeah. And I think that was the genesis off really behind the association. That's still the fundamental mission behind the Association for Young Astrologers, was that it's the association for young astrologers. And it's not necessarily just of young astrologers, but it's for helping all of those people that are just now coming into the community. And I know that that's still a large part of your mission at this point, right, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We want to create that space where it might feel like there isn't a space for you, or if you don't know anybody, if you're new to the community. Like Aya just wants to welcome all these new people and just have a space for them.
We didn't talk about room shares.
That's another,
That's something that Aya does. Well, you're just jumping there.
All right. Yeah, here we go. So another way to defray costs a little bit is to find a roommate, or if possible, find a room share. Sometimes conferences themselves will have a roommate program where if you're seeking a roommate, you can like submit your name. And Aya, several years in the past, has done room shares where everybody, you know, we get a big suite and a bunch of people stay in there, and you can end up getting the cost per night down to like, you know, $30-$40.
$30. Yep.
Yes. Yeah,
I stayed in the Aya room share at NCGR 2013. I paid $30 for the whole like 4-night thing. And I met all kinds of interesting characters. That's where I first met Sam Reynolds in the room share. And I met Jen Zark there.
And yeah.
So you'll just run into all kinds of interesting people. And it's really fun. Because, you know, you're in a room with a bunch of other, you know, younger and newer astrologers. And so you're all sort of at the same place. And then to sort of like look back on it 5 years in the future to see where you all are now. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Chris, I know, you were the president of Aya for a while there and you put on room shares yourself. But did you ever stay in room shares?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was my first several years. And that became, when I was president, like the only thing that we really consistently did and focused on was just getting younger astrologers to conferences. And often the room shares were the biggest piece of that, because it's like that really becomes the main expense, especially if it's like a 5-day conference. Mm-hmm. If it's like $100 or $115 a night for just the hotel room, that's like $500-$600 to have a place to stay. So, and that's the biggest area where we felt we could help younger astrologers to defray expenses, was by, we would rent out like usually like a large hotel suite, like a presidential suite or something like that, and then pack like 15 young astrologers into it. Because the more, you know, people you have in, you know, sharing one room, then it just cuts down on the fees, like you guys were saying. And it has this other additional interesting effect of really tightly binding together this group of people who are not just coming to their first conference or their first few conferences, but also have this shared experience together of like, mm-hmm. you know, living together and sleeping together and eating together for like a week. And that can create a really memorable experience oftentimes that I know I have a lot of fond memories of that. Like at UAC 2008, we rented out a presidential suite and we had a ton of people in there. It was at least like 15 people, and we were all sleeping on like, we got blow up mattresses and stuff for everybody. And so it was just wild to walk into this room and see everybody like scattered around at different points. Or I remember, you know, it doesn't always go smoothly, of course, because then you have different like personalities and people, you know, maybe certain personalities might clash. Or I remember
bathrooms.
like 2008, there was an argument in the IO room about like the after the Return of the Magi premiere, and there was like an argument about the quality of the movie.
Oh no.
Yeah, so you know, it doesn't always go super smoothly, but at least everybody...
That's such a nerdy thing for us to argue about, by the way. Can we just address that for a second? A room full of astrologers arguing about how great the Return of the Magi was.
Well, have you seen the Return of the Magi?
No, I actually haven't.
Okay, watch the Return of the Magi and get back to me on that. And then...
Will it make it less of a nerdy thing to argue about?
I think you'll understand why.
Oh, wink, wink. Okay.
Yeah. It was not. It was actually, that's funny because that was a premiere. We organized the premiere of Return of the Magi at the 2008 UAC. And that was one of the things that Aya hosted, is we hosted the premiere of this movie in front of like 1,500 astrologers. But it was like this, it was the person's first time making a movie, and he was kind of an amateur filmmaker, and the first cut did not go over well at all, and it kind of bombed, and so it was kind of a big embarrassment for Aya back in 2008.
Oh no.
Aww.
But as an event, it was actually fun, and we got popcorn for everybody and organized this huge event, so it was a memorable experience, and it was part of just the conference going experience back then. But it's one of those funny memories then, is people talking about it and the discussions that it sparked in the subsequent days in the hotel room with all the young astrologers. So yeah, so Aya,
fly on that wall,
right? So Aya, that's one of the things that Aya has been doing all along, is organizing those room shares. So I'm really glad to hear that you guys are continuing that tradition, and I think it's something that people should definitely take advantage of by getting in touch with you guys to find out how they could take part in that if they wanted to. And even if they can't, through Aya, sometimes just connecting with other friends and sharing a room with people, or connecting the conference organizers and asking them if they're connecting any people for room shares, is a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And this kind of goes back to the idea that sometimes it's easier to go to a conference for your first time if you know somebody there, if you have a friend. And sometimes the friend that you bring to the conference is like the roommate that you meet when you get there, or like people from the room share. So that kind of like links two of these things together that could make that first experience a little bit smoother.
Yeah, definitely. And building that sort of connection even more by having that sort of shared experience with a friend, because that's also nice, because you can compare notes and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes even getting, when it comes to lectures, getting recommendations from other people, like what lectures you should go see, or if you just came out of...
What speakers are good, or which speakers are kind of more sleepy, or...
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or if you just came out of a lecture, sometimes being able to tell a friend about it or hear from another friend, like how was that lecture you just came out of, can be really good. Or, you know, figuring out what recordings you should get afterwards and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
All right. So room shares, have we covered that? Is there anything else we should talk about in terms of that, in terms of defraying that cost?
I think that's actually everything this time.
I think that's it.
Okay. So those are some of the expenses, the major expenses, and those are some ways to defray the costs. And I mean, of course, there's sometimes other incidental expenses that can come up, especially depending on if you aren't like really tight on money. Sometimes, you know, you'll show up to the trade show and there'll be like 20 astrology books that you want to buy, and a question of like, can you actually afford to get this book, or should you have brought a little bit of extra money in order to buy, you know, astrology books or something like that, can be a conundrum that you might run into. But that's, you know, really depending on the situation. So I think we covered all the cost stuff. So the very last thing is just mentioning that there are some astrology conferences coming up over the course of the next year. I think there's at least four of them that I know of off the top of my head.
With UAC, it's kind of a sleepy period of time for conferences.
Yeah. So UAC, so the United Astrology Conference, it's taking place in Chicago in May of 2018. And that's really, there's at least four conferences happening, three or four conferences happening next year. But UAC is really going to be the biggest astrological conference, basically, next year, and everything else is kind of going to be dwarfed by it, just because, like we were saying earlier, it's going to have the largest number of astrologers in attendance of probably any conference this decade, because it'll have something like 1,500 to maybe upwards of 2,000 astrologers in attendance, plus over 100 professional astrologers giving workshops and presentations. That's really, I mean, all things considered, that's probably the main conference that we have to recommend to everybody.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Go to. I mean, I know you guys are.
I mean, UAC is like such a crazy thing that I'm not sure I would recommend it as like a first conference.
Yeah.
It's that is so easy to get swept up in it if you don't know people. Like it's a mess. Like, I mean, I'm going to say mess and I don't mean it that way, but it's just, it's a lot to process, especially if you're by yourself.
Yeah. That is a good point. It could be very overwhelming because it's such a big conference for a first time person. And so normally if it was ideal, it would be better if you went to a smaller conference first. I guess the only issue is just, it's such a unique opportunity.
Yeah, you're not going to have it again for another, 4 years.
Well, best case scenario, the last one was 6 years ago, 2012.
Right.
And it's always such a difficult thing getting three or four astrological organizations to like work together and cooperate that UAC was supposed to happen. The last one was supposed to happen in 2016, but because of infighting between the organizations, they actually didn't get it together until 2 years later. So it's happening 2 years after when it should have. So it's such a unique thing. And also the quality of the presentations at a UAC tends to be better than the presentations at like a normal annual conference that happens every year, just because UAC is, at least theoretically, it's supposed to be like the best of the best.
Right. The Olympics.
Right. So everybody, all the professional astrologers like bring their A game, and that's versus like, the blow off lecture where, you just came up with some concept or, something that you have, where you're doing the last minute lecture prep. UAC is definitely not one of those.
I see what you're saying.
Sure.
Yeah, totally.
So UAC is the main one, definitely next year. You can just Google it, or I'll put a link to all of the conferences that we mentioned in the description page for this episode.
We're all going to be at UAC, right? Like,
yeah, I'm going.
All of us are going to be at UAC.
Yeah, I'll be there. Pretty much everybody who's ever been on the podcast is going to be there. Right. I know Austin's speaking there. Kelly's speaking there. Demetra's there. She's the one that's running the traditional astrology track. Ben Dykes is going to be there. I mean, pretty much, I mean, if you guys can name anybody.
Yeah.
Ryan's going to be there too. Ryan's going to speak there too. So.
Yeah. But I said that more as just like, for people, listening, since Joe and I are very focused on encouraging people to be there and like connecting with people when they get there, like we will be at UAC. So if you are, interested in going to a conference for the first time, but you don't really have anybody around, then, contact us. We'll be there. We can help guide you on your first thing. That's why I mentioned that. Like, we'll all be there.
Right. And like, get hooked up with the Association for Young Astrologers, because like, that's going to be our whole thing, especially for UAC, is like kind of gathering the young people, the new people who've never been there before. And yeah, I mean, just come talk to me. If you see me, look for the red and orange hair.
Yeah, it's Joe.
That's me.
Definitely. And Ryan, AFAN is going to be doing a hospitality suite and like the whole nine yards as well, right?
Yes. As far as I know.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Okay. And one of the things that I, we've been talking about is at NORWAC this year, I meant to do some sort of meetup with podcast listeners, because as the podcast has grown over the past few years, more and more people will come up to me at conferences and say, this is my first conference and I'm here because you mentioned on the podcast.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. And it's something that constantly surprises me and Kelly are constantly mentioning it, and also Austin, that we keep having people come up and talk to us, because we're always surprised, because we record these things like you and us three are doing right now, where it's just like we're each at our separate homes and we're talking like over Skype or something, and then we put it out in the world, but then you don't really have a full sense of how many people are actually listening to it. But then when you go to these conferences, suddenly there's like dozens of people coming up and saying they listened to that last episode, and you really get a sense for how many people are listening. So I mentioned that just because I've been meaning to find ways through the podcast just to have a meetup and to connect other podcast listeners, and also to help people who, if it's their first conference, to help them get integrated and like meet other people that have similar interests or, you know, what have you. So we're definitely going to be doing, at the very least, some sort of podcast meet and greet for listeners. That's something Kelly and I have talked about and definitely want to do. And best case scenario, we might do some sort of live recording of a podcast episode at the conference, but we haven't really fully worked that out yet. But one way or another, we're going to set something up. So we'll have an announcement about that hopefully sometime in the next few months. And then people, if they want to join us, can, and they're going to be at UAC, can do so. So, all right. So, and that's UAC, but there's also other conferences.
I think one thing that we should have done earlier was sort of differentiate between types of conferences, because you have like UAC, which is the big granddaddy of them all. And then you have like the national conferences, usually how I refer to them, which are run by like an organization, like you'll have an ESAR conference or an NCGR conference. And they're usually every 2 years, I think. Does that sound right,
Chris? Yeah, every 2 or 3 years.
And then you'll have the regional conferences, which tend to run annually, but they're always in the same place.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point, because that's pretty much all that's happening besides UAC next year is the two.
The regionals, yeah.
Yeah, because the regionals usually what happens is the sponsoring organizations that do UAC, they all make an agreement together that they won't do a conference. They're one of their own conferences within a year of UAC, but they'll all just pool their resources for the mega conference of UAC. But the regional conferences, who are just like local organizers, aren't part of those agreements. So the two regional conferences next year is NORWAC in Seattle is going to take place. The Northwest Astrological Conference is going to take place sometime before UAC, I think in like March or April.
And early then, this year.
Yeah.
That's just something that I think is important, because NORWAC is usually held Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, it's always at the very end of May typically, but that's the weekend that that UAC is occupying this year. So NORWAC will take place in Seattle earlier in 2018, and that'll be a smaller NORWAC than usual. It'll mainly be sort of local people or people from the Pacific Northwest, but it'll still have maybe 100 or 200 or more astrologers in attendance compared to its usual 250 to 300 plus. And then the other regional conference that's going to take place next year is SOTA, right?
Yes. SOTA always takes place in like early October. And that, I think regional conferences are a really great way to get started going to conferences, just because they tend to be like smaller and more intimate slightly less chaotic than some of the larger ones.
Right. Yeah. So if you're just wanting to kind of get your feet wet, one of these regional ones would be a really great way to do that. If you're not ready for the granddaddy of conferences, as Ryan put it.
I mean,
or just go for it.
Yeah. What I mean, Joe.
Oh, I'm ready.
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend just going for it no matter what, even if you have trepidation, as long as you can do it. But however, if you can't for whatever reason, if it's too expensive or if you have something scheduled like that weekend and you can't make it off work or whatever, then go to one of the regional conferences, and that'll still be like the next best thing. So those are the three conferences happening next year. I know there's also other conferences. So this is we're all US astrologers, so we're focusing on like the North America conferences. There's also other annual conferences, like in the UK, there's the Astrological Association hosts an annual conference. Typically it's every fall, I think around September or so, but for some reason this year, I think I heard that they're moving it earlier. So it's going to take place actually right after UAC, I think in like June or something. And I have no idea why they're moving it forward from its usual space in the fall to be that close to UAC. But for whatever reason, if you're in the UK or if you're in Europe and you can't make it to the United Astrology Conference in Chicago, you might consider going to the Astrological Association Conference in the UK, I think somewhere around June. But other than that, I'm not sure what other conferences are going on. There might be, I think there is actually
happening this year.
Which one?
GLAC?
Yeah, Great Lakes Astrology Conference. I'm not totally positive. I heard somewhere that they're not having GLAC this year because of UAC, but I can't confirm. I'd have to check that out.
Sure. And then I think there might be some big conference that's happening in India that I know a lot of astrologers from the US and the UK have been invited to. And there may be other regional conferences in different countries that are happening as well. So check with whatever your local astrological organization is, wherever you live. And that's typically where you'll find out more information about local conferences. All right. Well, I think that that's bringing us to the end of this episode then. We're coming up on 2 hours here. So I think we got through just about everything that we planned. It took a little bit longer than anticipated, but I think we did pretty good. Is there anything that we meant to go over that we didn't get a chance to?
I do have one more thing that I want to mention that I'm not sure we ever planned on talking about, but as far as like going to the conference and that whole experience, a lot of conferences, or I assume all conferences, I'm not sure why they wouldn't, will give attendees feedback forms.
Yeah.
Fill these out.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's super important.
If you get one, fill these out. A lot of times, because we're still old school, a lot of times these will be paper forms. But some organizations have moved for like MailChimp or SurveyMonkey kind of things. And make sure to fill these out because these are super important. This is how conferences figure out what to do differently next time, what to do better, who to invite back, things like that. So if you go to a conference, even if you're a veteran, you've gone to a bunch of them, make sure to fill these out.
Yeah, definitely. Because that actually oftentimes has a bearing on, they take that feedback seriously, and
yes,
oftentimes
absolutely,
their speaker selection at the subsequent conference is partially predicated on who got good feedback at the last one. So that's definitely important. And then one thing I meant to go back to that we kind of glossed over is, Joe, you were talking about how, you know, just looking at over the past few years before you attended conferences and not seeing a lot of like social media stuff being posted from conferences, and that you wanted to fill that gap. And that was actually something that you did a really good job of at the SOTA conference last month, was you actually did a whole like Instagram series of like trying to document the conference, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. I was glued to my phone the whole time, which was a little bit exhausting, but it was really great to just kind of cover what that was like. Like, you know, I would get up in the morning and I would put a little update on my Instagram story for the Association for Young Astrologers Instagram. It was kind of like a project on there, and say, you know, hey, I'm going downstairs to grab breakfast, and then we're all going to go see Adam Gainsburg's talk, and he's talking on this and blah, 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 and just kind of like how the day goes along. I'll be doing that at UAC as well, and at SOTA as well. Oh, sorry. Get over it, Ryan.
Sorry. It's just, I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
Tease me later.
No, it's not. It's not even just a teasing thing. It's just like, it's a lot of effort.
You know, I enjoy that kind of stuff. Like I said, I'm super extroverted, really social, but it is a lot of work. And I can see why, you know, if there's not a specific person doing that, it's like if you don't have time. So I'm making time to do that. So if you absolutely cannot make it to a conference, do keep your eye on social media just to kind of get a feel for it and see if that's maybe something you'd like to plan for the next year. But yeah, that's something I did at SOTA. I kept that Instagram story updated 24/7. Just
literally
ask my friends.
24/7. I think there's a picture of us like sprawled out on a hotel room bed at like 2 a.m.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
And that's conference life.
It is conference life, but it's so endearing. Like there was one point, one afternoon, I think it was Saturday afternoon, where we were all really tired. So we just used, okay, so we were there with Wade Caves, and like Wade had his projector that he used for his lecture, and he projected, we moved the hotel furniture and we projected Mean Girls onto
Why
the
are
wall.
You
and we just,
story?
Because it's like really, well, that was on the Instagram story too. No, all of this to say, like, there's so much stuff. There's so many like small things and small ways that you bond with people and things that you totally wouldn't expect to happen at a conference. And that's really what I want to bring to people. And I want to get people excited about attending because it's so worth it. It's so worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And I really appreciated that you did that just because it was able to convey some of that. Because usually what happens is like speakers or other attendees go to these conferences and initially, sometimes you'll see some pictures of like people showing up, but then as the weekend wears on and people get more and more exhausted, like the pictures slowly disappear. So
people
having,
just go to their rooms and, you know, project movies onto the hotel wall and
right. And forget to document it.
Right.
So yeah, I'm glad you did that. And that's great that you're planning on doing it for UAC and for SOTA next year. So thanks. People can check out, will you be doing it on your personal account or on the AYA Instagram account or what?
I will probably be doing a little bit of both, but anything that I do for these conferences, that's definitely going to be on AYA's Instagram. And that's just AYA Astrology on Instagram. And yeah, and I'll keep Facebook updated as well.
Okay, awesome. And the UAC people are actually doing a much better job. So Laura Nalbandian is like the primary organizer of UAC. And that's what's awesome about UAC this time around is they're doing a super good job with just about every aspect of it, where one of the things they did is they actually hired a conference planner who is Laura Nalbandian, who's like a second generation astrologer and who has a lot of experience organizing conferences like NORWAC. But one of the things she's really good at is delegating responsibility and getting people to do specific jobs. So one of the things they're doing a great job at is they have a social media team. And two of the people that are doing that are Sam Reynolds, who has been on the podcast in the past. And I think he's doing one of the people that's running either the Twitter or the Facebook account. And so it's Sam. And then there's one other social media person, Demetrius Bagley, who is the other social media guy.
That's such an amazing double team for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're
both social media experts. So they've already got stuff going. They've got the Facebook account and the Twitter account, and they've already got the hashtag picked out for UAC, which is hashtag UAC 2018. So you can already start following that. And I think it's already got some activity, but it's going to get more and more activity on Twitter and Facebook over the course of the next few months until we reach May and the conference takes place. And that's definitely one way you can follow what's going on in terms of that conference. Awesome. All right. Well, great. Well, awesome. I'm glad we had this discussion. Thanks a lot, both of you, for joining me today. I'm glad that we got to do this, and I think we were able to cover enough to give people a sense of both, you know, why it's important as well as why they might want to attend and how they might make that happen in a way that, you know, I don't know if I've seen other discussions like this have gone that into depth. So I hope people find it useful.
Yeah, I definitely hope we can encourage more people to try and go and, you know, make sure that you're looking up different astrology organizations on social media, because AFAN will be posting things about their annual scholarships really soon. So if you're planning on trying to make one of these 2018 conferences, keep your eye out, because probably around early to mid-December is when AFAN will be making their announcements about scholarship applications.
Okay, right.
And just really quickly before we wrap up, AYA is doing a room share at UAC, and we have just announced that. So if you are interested in getting in on that and sharing a suite with a bunch of other young astrologers, go check out our website, which is youngastrologers.org, or you can find the same announcement on Facebook as well. So definitely check that out.
Definitely. And then I heard that the three primary astrological sponsoring organizations of UAC are all three. They have three additional scholarships to give out each. So AFAN's going to give out three. NCJR is going to give out three, and ESAR is going to give out three.
And those are specifically for UAC.
Right. So if you're a member of one of those organizations, be on the lookout for that at some point in the next few months, because it's going to happen pretty soon. Or if you're not a member yet, you can always sign up to become a member. There's nothing wrong with signing up now.
No.
And then you'll get that notification, because that's one of the reasons why the organizations do these things, is they actually want you to sign up in order to be able to apply for things like scholarships. So, you know, couldn't hurt to sign up for one of those memberships now if that would help, if it'll give you a shot to get a scholarship. And then
there's such small investments, like it's like $30 to $45 for a membership to any one of these three organizations, and be able to do that to get a chance at, you know, a $500 scholarship. Sign me up.
Right. Yeah.
But I am signed up.
Yeah. And then it gives you, And then it gives you access to some news. And sometimes that's how you find out about community things like scholarships or room shares or other things, is through those organizations. So that's one of the real benefits that they still serve in the community, even in the internet age where everybody's on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and everything else. They still serve that as a really important role and purpose.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. Awesome. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode then. So both of you, thanks a lot for joining me. Where can people find out more information about you? Ryan, what's your website at this point?
My website is medievalastrologyguide.com. And of course, I'm on Facebook and whatnot.
Awesome. And Joe, where can people get a hold of you?
They can go to my website. It's amyjoegleason.com. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter all the time, since it's kind of what I do. But yeah, they can check me out there and connect.
Okay, awesome. And your organization website is youngastrologers.org, right?
Yes, yeah, youngastrologers.org. And you can follow Aya on Facebook as well. We keep that up to date with our little monthly dinner and drinks events, and we'll have more news about UAC coming up. So yeah, check that out too.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing all three, both of you, all two of you, including myself at UAC here in a few months, which even though it's November, it's like, it sounds like that's very far away, but it'll actually be here soon. Yeah. They come up super fast when you least expect it. So I look forward to seeing you two there. And I look forward to seeing, you know, everyone who's listening there. You know, we'll see you at the conference, and definitely come up and say hi.
Yes.
If you see one of the three of us, we're all three very much open to that, I think, right?
I mean, we're going to be the people without gray hair there.
Well,
my statement is still accurate, Chris.
Yeah, I will have no hair. So your statement is still accurate. All right. On that note, I think that's a perfect note to end on. All right. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.